This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Jim Williams. He's a Senior Vice President for Global Business Development at Dayon. And we have Connor White, also works for Dayon, and he's president of something called X Products. They're in the studio today to talk about changes in identity management, the identity ecosystem, and it's all tied into cloud computing and mobile devices, and there's all kinds of topics involved in here that many of my listeners are very familiar with. Some listeners hear these new abbreviations, FCCX. What does that mean? NSTIC. What does that mean? Trusted initiatives. I mean, what's going on here? How's this all changing? I thought we'd bring in these two gentlemen and give us some insight into the changing world of identification in the federal workspace here. Before we begin, I think everyone on the planet knows who Jim Williams is. Jim, why don't you just give us just maybe 10, 15 seconds of your background, just the mountaintops.
Thanks, John. Good morning. I worked for government for over 30 years, worked in many different agencies, loved public service. After I retired from government, as I always say, Dayon momentarily lowered their standards and let me in. And I've been there for over 3 years and loved it.
And no one's called security on you yet, huh? Well, hey.
For those who don't know Dayon, it's a very cool company with Irish roots, but we're a U.S.-based company, but small but worldwide, and really have been thought leaders in identity management for well over a decade.
And our other guest here is Living Proof, that's an Irish company. Connor, tell us about your background and how you wound up working for Dayon, please.
Thank you, John, and thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. So as you can probably tell by my accent, I'm originally Irish, but I've been here now almost 11 years, so well transplanted. So I run a division of Dayon that focuses on enterprise and consumer security, especially using mobile devices as we look towards the transition we're making from fixed land-based infrastructure to basically always-on, always-available internet connectivity. My background, I grew up in Ireland, mostly worked in the computer security, cybersecurity, smart cards, PKI space before I decided to move into biometrics, looking at, fundamentally tokens today don't authenticate the person. They don't involve the person in the transaction. They involve a PIN or a device. But really, biometrics allows you to involve the person as well in the transaction. So that was my fascination with the field. Been here, like I said, 10 years, well settled. Enjoy Dayon.
And Jim and I both know this marketplace fairly well, and I'll just paint the picture for maybe some listeners. You know, there's a big move to the cloud, and that is going to save a lot of money for the federal government. We know that, but there's always inherent risks and changes in moving to the cloud. And one of these big changes, Jim, I think is identifying yourself and who are you. And if your servers are just down the hall, there's one thing. But if your servers are in five different geographic locations, there's more challenges as far as identification go. And in the last 4 or 5 years, there have been general movements in altering the way identification take place. Want to expand on that a little bit?
Sure, John. You're exactly right. If you think about the old days where you had the server down the hall and you're hardwired to the server, you knew who the server was and the server knew who you were because you were hardwired into it. Now it's a very virtual world. Moving to the cloud, people are moving towards mobility and telework, and citizens want to be able to do business with the government from their mobile devices. And how do you authenticate those people? And in all sectors of the economy, people are concerned about this. You know, all you have to do is look at Verizon's data breach investigations report that comes out every year, and it's exponentially increasing the risk of doing business online. And we've got to find ways to be able to securely identify people so they can live their lives, whether they're a government worker doing business with their agency or a citizen doing business with the government. They can do business securely in a trusted way. And that means securely identifying these people. And that's where Dayon comes in, where we've been specializing in identity management, particularly in biometrics. And just the way you identify yourself is really what you know, a PIN or a password or some sort of secret phrase, what you have, a driver's license or some sort of ID card, but it's also who you are. And that's where it's getting to be biometrics are necessary in electronic transactions to really identify that individual by using all three of those factors, what you have, what you know, and who you are.
In Washington, D.C., here we drive around, we see federal buildings, and we figure, well, everyone who works for the federal government is in one of these buildings. Well, O'Connor, it's just not the truth. I mean, many agencies are spread out all over the place, Department of State spread out over the world, and Dayan really has international experience with assisting people in being able to identify themselves remotely. I mean, because you've done so much in so many countries.
That's correct. Our systems are deployed at some of the, not only the United States, but some of the biggest and most progressive democracies around the world, helping for everything from border security to social inclusion. And you're right, as Jim was saying, you know, we've come so far in the last 20, 30 years in terms of connectivity. Back in the 60s, I had to just prevent Jim from logging into my account on our IBM mainframe, which is a problem today in our office. But now I'm almost never in the office. I'm always on the road. I'm always traveling with mobile devices. And so our needs have changed. And if you think about where we've come, even just think about Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and social networking and delivery of online services to citizens, 10, 15 years ago, we would just search. 10 years ago, we began to look for more than just results. We looked for service. And today, I do most of my shopping, online. I do all my banking online. So the consequences of these transactions are much greater today than they ever were. Yet we're still using technology invented in 1960 to solve the problem of, keeping Jim Williams off my keyboard in a closed environment, which is a password. It doesn't work anymore. Passwords are broken, and we need to look to newer technologies to protect our privacy and to protect our identity online, because these transactions have consequence. The consequences are growing every day, and the world has changed for the better, in my opinion, in that regard. But we need to put the right measures in place to enable people to transact securely and with total confidence in terms of their interactions.
Jim, when I waltz into a federal agency, there's all kinds of security requirements. But I think from, a federal manager's perspective is allowing someone access to the Wi-Fi system, then allowing them access to databases. And all of a sudden you multiply this problem with, okay, now employees want to have mobile access to Wi-Fi, mobile access to data. I mean, this is a very complicated problem just in a federal office building itself. When you have a distributed environment, the multiples of troubles just emerge everywhere, don't they?
Well, that's exactly right. And, the threats are growing every day. And at the same time the threats are growing, we have the workforce wanting to go mobile and agencies needing to move into the cloud to save money and improve service. So we've got to have a solution that makes sure that security is built into that. And that is really more secure authentication. And, somebody at one agency suggested to me he'd like to get away from wired buildings, go completely wireless, because that way he can make sure that everybody who comes in and wants to access the network, the applications, the data, the systems, must authenticate themselves versus being hardwired in. And that's a important requirement out of the White House, which is really complying with the OMB Memorandum M1111, 11 stands for 2011, saying that agencies must use their HSPD 12 card and use that to authenticate people who have logical access entering their networks. And with mobile devices, it becomes more of a challenge. But the solution is there. And the solution is there around using digital identities and biometrics and making sure you know that it's Jim Williams or you know it's Connor White who is the person trying to access that data.
Connor, if people want to get more information about Connor and the company, they can go to Dayon, DAON.com. I work with software developers all the time. We're taking a whole bunch of them down to the baseball game this weekend. And they talk about software lifecycle. They talk about, managing it. But I think as far as identity management goes, I mean, there's a lifecycle management to just this concept alone, isn't it? I mean, there's people get hired, they get promoted, they get demoted, they change locations. Maybe they get promoted and change locations. And this is in all federal agencies and all commercial worlds too. I mean, it gets difficult with this life cycle concept, doesn't it?
It does. It's very correct. Like everybody else, the whole world is life cycle, basically, all your functions on a daily basis. And identity is no different. We've mapped out a pretty comprehensive life cycle that we use with our customers that begins with either pre-registration or registration, proofing of the identity, and then assurance of the identity downstream. And it's very important to create a chain of trust from the first point to encounter the individual right through their use of the identity from there on. So you'll see in a lot of these progressive programs, it's the first phase is when you encounter a person is actually to make sure you're dealing with John Gilroy, right? Now, once I know it's you and I've got to a level of assurance that works, the next thing I need to do then from that point is assure myself of that identity from a relying party perspective downstream. And that's where we bring in technologies that enable, that prevent you, for example, that prevent you from being proofed, and we get proof it's you, but then I can subvert that from then on and come in as you and take over your rights and privileges. And so you've got to take that, you've got a life cycle that you've got to manage, but you've got to create a chain of trust from the start of that life cycle right through the operational use of all phases of that life cycle.
Let's take a quick break and come back, talk more about identity management in the federal government, some of the challenges, and look at some solutions that are out there, maybe a couple of pilot programs and where these pilot programs are actually headed. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Jim Williams, Senior Vice President for Global Business Development at Dayon, and his colleague, Connor White, who is the President of X Products at Dayon. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Jim Williams, Senior Vice President for Global Business Development at Dayon, and Connor White, President of X Products, also at Dayon. We're talking about identity management and changes. I mean, I think everyone listening to the show knows there's been drastic changes in the federal government, pushed to the cloud, people waltzing in the office with mobile devices. Jim, maybe you can give us an overview of what's happened just in the last 12, 15 months as far as these changes have taken place. And there's been some pilot programs with some agencies, and people are kind of putting their little toe in the bathtub and testing things out. So give us an overview of what's going on there and maybe where Dayon fits in this project.
Sure, John. Well, I would say this is an area where the government really is being a leader across the world, frankly. And through the president's national strategy for trusted identities in cyberspace, the president really had a three-pronged approach to addressing the problem that Connor talked about earlier, is the trust model of the internet is broken, as more and more transactions of consequence are being done over the internet, being done online with mobile devices. Passwords are broken, so people will actually go away from doing electronic transactions unless they feel they can trust the internet. And that's why the president came up with a national strategy for trusted identities in cyberspace, or NSTIC, with a three-pronged approach. Number one, get the private sector to develop the identity ecosystem by getting companies and organizations together to develop the right standards and policies for an interoperable new identity ecosystem that people can trust. The second was to get the government to be an early adopter of whatever comes out of that private sector development of the identity ecosystem. And the third was to fund pilots where they could provide seed money to start looking at some of the new technologies and new best practices. And Dayon was honored to be one of the five original grantees to engage in these pilots. There's also another effort going on where NIST is doing the NSTIC program, working with the private sector, but they've also tapped the Postal Service to award the FCCX, or Federal Cloud Credentialing Exchange, which the Postal Service has done it well. They've awarded the contract, and it's for a company to develop the cloud infrastructure. So if you're one of the big consumer-facing agencies, such as VA, IRS, Social Security, or Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services that interface with citizens all the time, want to do it electronically, now you can have this cloud broker that sits in between the citizens and the government agencies that can take advantage of the NSTIC solutions and the approved solutions to say, government, you can communicate, and citizens, you can communicate in a secure way with each other. And that's really where I think the U.S. government is doing a very fine job and really leading the way for the rest of the world.
So, Connor, where does your company, where does Dayon fit with this initiative?
With NSTIC?
Mm-hmm.
So we are one of the five initial awardees that have stood up our IDP, our identity provider, in the cloud, working with a series of relying parties. As Jim mentioned, NSTIC creates I liken it to what Visa and MasterCard do in terms of how they manage your credit, if you like, or how you can assert your credit as you travel. I travel all the time. I don't have to have a direct relationship with where I'm going to have dinner in New York tonight. Okay, I don't need to have money on deposit with that restaurant because I can just use my credit card. They go back to my bank. My bank says, yes, we'll make sure you get paid. Well, what we do at NSTIC and what our IDP does is it makes sure that relying parties, businesses who want to service citizens and consumers but don't want the hassle of managing their identity, they can reach out to us and we will assert the Jim Williams, for example, his identity to a relying party very easily and do it securely. So as a citizen, I end up being able to bank my identity, if you like, with one bank that I trust, instead of having to proliferate around the internet. And this gets back to the problem that we're dealing with today, which is the proliferation of identity attributes that are being stored everywhere. And one of the things that I should have mentioned earlier is when you think about the famous attack on Sony, a lot of people will remember that from a couple of years ago, that Sony got hacked and they got the passwords. Well, why did hackers care about Sony? They cared about Sony because people's password in the Sony system and their username, usually their email, is the same as their online banking in three or four of their banks. Most Americans have somewhere between 40 and 40 plus accounts, okay, online. Yet the average is 8.5 passwords. I don't yet know what a 0.5, half a password looks like. But the fundamental math here is that we're reusing our passwords, or we're creating passwords that are too complex to remember. And in general, people are reusing passwords at multiple sites or using a simple formula to create passwords each time. That means if I crack one of these sites, I can effectively, and they don't all securely manage my identity, then if I crack the easiest one, I can get access to many, many more. Because once I have your password, there's no way to prevent me from being you.
So, Jim, we could move into a world where there's no passwords. It's all biometric or voice activated or a different way to identify it. I don't know. I mean, there's risks involved in that too, aren't there?
Well, there are risks, but I think where we're going is we have to include biometrics in order to more securely identify somebody. It may also include a PIN or a password because, again, it's part of the components of who you are is biometrics. What you know is a PIN or password or a phrase. And what you have might be a card, although I think in electronic transactions, cards are going away. And I think this is, as Connor said, you know, people simply can't remember all these passwords and they're broken anyway. So from a double standard, we need to move away from passwords as people are doing more and more things that are of consequence. You think about the Postal Service just said they're going to put out 175,000 mobile phones to their workforce. The Army is planning to put a smartphone in the hands of every soldier. And if you're going to disseminate intelligence to a soldier, you want to make sure you know it's that soldier and not some enemy combatant who may have stolen that particular device. Same thing when you communicate with first responders. You want to know who they are. If the federal government is dealing from a healthcare standpoint with a citizen, you want to make sure if they're accessing their health record, nothing is more private than that. And you think about health records and the need for privacy, nothing is more important than somebody who has either a mental health history, substance abuse history. Once that is breached, it's gone. You must have more secure ways of identifying people so that they can conduct these transactions online.
So, Connor, is this the general concept called authentication as a service, AAAS, I guess? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it is. That's the underpinning of it. NSTIC is authentication as service in a federated environment. Mm-hmm. So the as a service generally relates to cloud-based computing. So I don't have to have a big IT infrastructure. I don't have to provision all this stuff. I can basically rent the in the cloud or somewhat subscribe to a service in the cloud. What the federated programs like NSTIC are doing is they're saying we will provide identity assurance as a service, but we will also scale it to a broader audience than just a point-to-point solution between one person and the cloud server they're talking to. So as a result, I can have my identity as a service managed on my behalf, but then I can trust my service provider to assert my identity to multiple relying parties, multiple people who don't need to know and manage my identity. They just need to be assured that I am who I claim to be. And so it scales. It scales much more efficiently than traditional identity assurance models that we've had up to now.
And then when you add the mobile factor, there's mobile identification service as well. I mean, it gets tricky, doesn't it?
It does. And you know, with the advent of mobile computing and smartphones and tablets and where we are today, there's no wires. I'll be anywhere, anytime. So there's no limits on when I want to do what I want to do anymore. And there's a lot more service delivery as a result. I mean, you can be walking down the street doing banking transactions. I can be posting to Facebook or Twitter. I can be, you know, checking online for something, trying to map my way to wherever I need to be, trying to actually later on today, I'll be doing a WebEx with the West Coast while I'm in a car, literally a video conference. These are all possible now because of the mobile generation and our mobile digital identities and the way the things we can do on that basis.
Well, I don't want to be driving the same road as you when that takes place.
I will be driving.
What am I going to say?
I'll be traveling in a car. I won't be driving.
Imagine the officer pulling you over and say, pardon me, I have to complete this thought.
Excuse me, I'm on a WebEx. Yeah,
certainly not the district.
But I can verify it's me. Several different ways. Yeah. Let's take a break. We can come back. We'll talk more about, you know, use the word provisioning. And that, I don't think people realize that, but just establishing someone's identity is a provisioning process. And when they get promoted or moved or change agencies, it has to be reprovisioned. When I think of the word provision, I think of cost. There's a cost involved in this. And if there's a way to get away from all this extra work of maintaining passwords and identities, there's got to be different ways than we've done it in the past, and that's what we're talking about today. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Jim Williams, Senior Vice President at Dayon, and his colleague Connor White, President of X Products at Dayon. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Jim Williams, Senior Vice President, Global Business Development at Dayon, and Connor White, President, X Products. You know, some of my listeners read blogs, and they write blogs, and have all kinds of interest in social media. If you want to find my blog, you can type in John Gilroy blog and find it. I have another one called Tech Tuesday Blog. Connor, do you write any blogs? Do you read any blogs? Can you suggest blogs for my listeners to read to keep up with identity management?
Yeah, I actually, our website has a ton of information, so forgive the plug, but that's where we put most
D-A-O-N. Of our... D-A-O-N.com, blogs there to learn about identity management.
Absolutely, we put a lot of stuff there. I write some stuff myself and the team. I tend to read a lot of different stuff, a very eclectic mix, everything from, you know, I'm basically first thing I do in the morning when I roll over, turn on my iPad and start reading different things from everything from CNN to Mashable, TechCrunch, as well as more technical trade articles. But I don't know if there's any particular thing I read that stands out more than anything else.
Well, I'm sure you read about the new Apple product.
Yes.
Well, the Apple product for identity management, I mean, this is a hot topic. I'm sure people like you are jumping up and down, whether it's 5 o'clock in the morning in your bedroom or you know, in your office. I mean, so they do have a new fingerprint device. Tell us about this product and where does it fit in for our federal listeners, please?
Sure, absolutely. So September 10th, Apple, it was probably the worst kept secret, if you like. It was well rumored ahead of time, but... Apple, who, you know, would arguably be one of the most consumer-friendly and consumer-conscious technology organizations in the world, they recognized that passwords are broken. And they took the very bold step to put a fingerprint sensor on the phone and make it available to a mass market. Their system stores the biometric, the fingerprint data on the phone itself and does the matching on the phone. Its first version is quite limited in terms of what it's used for. It's just for unlocking your phone and for doing iTunes purchases. But it's very, very interesting because what they're doing is they are going to fundamentally raise the consumer psyche around biometrics. They're gonna force the conversation, and I believe the result will be a very positive one, because it's biometrics enable a level of assurance that we don't have with things like passwords today, but also enables a level of convenience. What you'll see is you never forget your fingerprint, you never forget your face or your voice. You know, you don't have to, you know, kind of write it down somewhere and then lose that. It's something that's intrinsically you and with you all the time. And so what they're going to do is in the first release, as I said, they're going to keep it closed. Tim Cook was interviewed that day about opening it up, and he did not rule that out in the future. And they may open it up to other applications to use, to non-Apple apps on the phone, cloud services and so on. It's interesting, though, because Apple's just one device. When you think about it, and you know, you've got a ton of other devices out there, Google, Microsoft, BlackBerry, and they will follow Apple's suit. So what you're going to see in the next year or two is you're going to see a lot more of these kind of technologies coming to market and probably becoming standard on most new smartphones.
And ties right into your Xbox, doesn't it?
Absolutely. This is what we've been waiting for, quite frankly. X-Products is a platform that enables human authentication in any kind of environment. That's what it's designed to do. So it gives you consumers and organizations choice around how they want to assert their identity. If you want to stay on a password or SMS to your phone, you can do that. But we can do fingerprint authentication. We can do face authentication, voice authentication, as a demo I showed you before this segment. So, and because I can do this, because I can bring much more of the human into the equation, I can have a much higher level of trust in the interaction. And it works across all these platforms. So we're working with a lot of the banks. As a bank, I don't have to worry about what endpoint device my consumer's using. I just have to worry about what level of risk is in this transaction and how can I authenticate this person in the most convenient way. Is it their voice? Is it their face? Is it their fingerprint? Is it their location? Is it their password? Is it a combination of those? You know, so for the first time, I can deliver services to consumers that don't require them to have a separate hardware token, that don't require them to do jump through a million hoops to prove their identity.
You know, Jim, when Connor uses the word risk and assessment, and I think of my listeners, federal IT professionals, who are actually charged with the nuts and bolts of doing this. I mean, you know, there are some serious issues here. When you were retired from the federal government, they had to deprovision your account in some way, and when people move and change. And so some of these ideas of provisioning and adapting these services in the federal government, this is a challenge in and of itself.
Well, that's exactly right, John. And any IT professional will tell you their biggest concern is cybersecurity. And cybersecurity means how do you make sure that you know who's coming into your network is authorized to do so, and you know who that person is. And if you look at the data breach reports, you know, what you find is that the external threat is the majority of the threats, people coming in and being somebody else. And frankly, their attack vector is really being able to take somebody's password or name. And what you want to make sure when you provision that ID card, and after 9/11, we had the HSPD-12 requirements that said we've got to do a better job of vetting that individual and then issuing them a secure hard credential. And that was really designed around physical access to government buildings. But now we have all of this Connor talked about and you've talked about. It's mobility. It's accessing data anywhere from any device. And we've got to make the transition to these digital identities. And that's where I think Apple has helped by introducing the necessary biometrics. And typically for physical access, we've taken fingerprint biometrics. And those are important. But through a new concept NIST has called derived credential, we can take all of that vetting that was done based upon that fingerprint and the issuance of that hard ID card and transition that and bind that to a mobile device. And then using new biometrics like voice and face, we can authenticate to that individual level. And when we do that using derived credential, I can open up my smartphone, say I want to access a government website, and at the same time I'm recording my biometrics so that they can know who I am, they can go back and check all of that vetting information that was done under HSPD-12 to say, was Jim Williams fired 2 minutes ago? Was he deprovisioned? And is he still a good guy? And that's where you can link the vetting that has been done, the fingerprint check that has been done, but link it in a digital way where you can use the new biometrics, face, voice, even fingerprints on a phone someday.
Jim just used the word a good guy, and I think there are a lot of bad guys or bad actors who interact with the federal government, and there's a lot of fraud and abuse. And so when I think of your system, I think, well, geez, maybe that guy in Florida is going to be tagged because he is not using the correct credentials. And that's mm-hmm. what a system from day on can assist in is fraud, which you wouldn't think, here's identity management. No, but it has an impact on fraud and abuse, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it does. If you're, you know, on the internet, you know, if I'm take Jim's password and log in, there's no consequences to me. I mean, you can't find me from that generally. But if I have to provide my face, voice or fingerprint, you know, as a bad actor, I'm going to go to the easier target. Criminals attack the weakest link, the weakest vector. That's their standard way of attacking. So what you want to do is put barriers up that don't inconvenience the citizen, don't inconvenience the consumer, but drive them to look for other areas, to move away from, you know, the front door, the identity assurance. And, you know, and that's what you're going to see happen now with these devices, because for the first time ever, I can just touch my home button or I can just look at the camera and speak a few words. And all of a sudden, you can get a level of assurance on me that brings me into that transaction. And if the bad guy is trying to do that, it brings him into the transaction in a non-reputable way as well, which will probably prevent him from even trying.
You know, Jim, you pick up the Washington Post, the big splash headline, federal government wasting money on fraud and abuse. Federal government must move to collaboration. Federal government must move to the cloud. Well, we take those three concepts. Well, they can't do that without accurate identification, can they? I mean, step by step is you have to identify who you are and just be able to use cloud services at different levels.
Well, that's exactly right, John. When you look at all of the benefits program that often have enormous fraud associated with them, it's like what the country of India is doing, trying to register 1.2 billion people with finger, face, and iris, because they know if they can register and know who these people are, they can deliver those benefits only to that citizen, and nobody else can pretend to be that person. And they can actually deliver it more efficiently by putting some kind of micro ATM in a village where the person who's trying to access their 100 rupees a month from the Indian government can actually get that directly which eliminates the leakage in the system in between and makes sure that that citizen and only that citizen gets those benefits. So, you know, we often talk about biometrics. Biometrics protect your privacy because only you can be you. And I think as we try and look across all of the systems of government, whether it's in healthcare, benefits, financial, even immigration, all of these things are dependent upon identity. Identity is a common thread. I look across Department of Homeland Security. Their five key missions are immigration, counterterrorism, border security, disaster response, and all of their missions. The common thread is identity, and particularly in cybersecurity. All of their missions are critical upon knowing who someone is.
It's critical for us to take a break now and come back, talk more about identity management. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, you have Jim Williams, Senior Vice President for Global Business Development at Dayon, and his colleague, Connor White. He's the President of X Products at Dayon as well. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Jim Williams, Senior Vice President for Global Business Development at Dayon, and his colleague, Connor White, President of X Products at Dayon as well. For more information, daon.com. We're talking about identity management. And I have to get your IDs before you leave because we've got to do very complicated identity management here at Federal News Radio, but one of the things we don't worry about much. We do worry about social media. Many of our listeners are involved in social media. There's a lot of tweets that come out here, a lot of tweets that emanate from this building here. If you want to follow me, my handle is at Ray Gilray. I think Dayon's is at Daoninc. So you might get some tips and information. What I have to do, Connor, is have to give you a 10-question test now to find out if you're, in fact, a card-carrying nerd. Jim took this test in the past, so we have all his records detailed on my computer at home. We're going to have to ask you 10 questions to see if you actually are a card-carrying nerd or just a nerd wannabe, or maybe normal. Have to find out. So here's the 10 questions. Here we go. Do you even own a desktop PC?
Personally, I own two.
Two. That's probably negative points for the nerd crowd.
Yep.
And number of cell phones, the cell phones you actually purchased in the last 12 months?
Three.
Three. Now, that's a big point. That's a big nerd point. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do not.
Do you have a personal blog?
I do not.
Okay. And do you use any online personal backup services?
I do indeed, yes.
Okay. Which Dropbox or?
No, I use McAfee LiveSafe.
Okay. And what kind of smartphone do you have?
I have a bunch. So I actually have an iPhone and I have an Android phone as well.
And give me the number of apps you've used in the last 30 days.
Oh, I use, I use everything from...
10 plus, 20 plus, 100 plus?
30, 50 plus. Mm-hmm. I mean, I run my life off my smartphone.
Getting some nerd points here. So if we were to walk into your house this afternoon, how many tablet devices would we find?
You would find each one of my sons has a Kindle. My wife has an iPad. I have an iPad, an Nexus 7. I think we have about 12 computers in the house.
Oh, you get nerd points there.
So you asked me about desktops. I have two desktops. I have a ton of laptops, though.
What about social networking sites? Which you participate in?
LinkedIn. I don't have an account on Facebook. My wife has an account on Facebook. That's the kind of family account. We keep in touch with our friends and colleagues in Ireland that way.
And the last book you read, electronic or paper?
I almost never do paper anymore. I'm reading The Bellringers right now. I live off my Kindle.
So you slow start, but kind of surging in the area of the nerdosity. I'll have to put this through my UNIVAC computer and find out exactly a three-letter designation for your level of
so
nerdosity.
So you're calling me a nerd with a UNIVAC?
and printing out on my green bar as well. So
I used to bootstrap a PDP-11 at 13 years of age in high school. So
I remember moving PDP-11s off those raised floors. That was an adventure back in the day. We'd have to get movers to move it. Can you imagine that? Yeah. Look at that computer in your pocket. It's 2 ounces, and you have to hire movers to move deck PDP-11s.
And that's more powerful, by the way, than one in your pocket.
I'll bet. So, Jim, we like to tease and talk about being nerds and not being nerds. Where do you think this whole idea of identity management comes, and where is it heading in the future? Is the passwords thing of the past? All these cards that the govies carry around, that's going to be in the past? All going to be biometric or some kind of combination? Where's this whole idea of identity management heading, Jim?
Well, I believe with identity management, and as we've talked about, all the transactions of consequence, everything happening online. I mean, we're now talking about Syria in the news, and part of that, you know, potential battle with Syria is the electronic, is the online battle, you know, Syrian electronic army and us doing things from an electronic attack vector. Everything is electronic. We've got to make it more secure. I think biometrics are just simply that must come now, because they're the number of attacks, you know, read any of the reports, whether it's Verizon, Center for Strategic International Studies, the attacks are increasing exponentially. Doesn't even seem like the right word, but they're increasing not only in number, but in the consequences in terms of the damage that is done. We must do a better job of secure authentication. Whether PINs or passwords go away or stay as part of that identification scheme, I think that's to be seen. But I think clearly with digital identities, we've got to do a better job of including biometrics in that, so we know who someone is. Everything can be hacked. I mean, they talk about your car's brakes being hacked. You know, everything that involves an electronic system is vulnerable, and we need to better protect people who can access those systems. And that's part of the president's cybersecurity executive order towards critical infrastructure. Still waiting for Congress to pass a bill on cybersecurity, but there's no doubt it will include something on digital identities. If you look at the recent draft NIST framework for cybersecurity produced as a result of that executive order, it points to NSTIC and the identity ecosystem as a necessary part of that framework.
Connor, it's obvious from your accent you were born outside the United States. Your company has worked with a lot of commercial organizations. You yourself have been a lot of different countries around the world. Who's going to offer the leadership in this? Is it, in fact, going to be the federal government going to lead on this? Is the federal government going to watch what banks do and mirror, or are they going to watch what other? Well, geez, in Canada, they're using this system. Maybe we should try it here. Where's the leadership going to be in this?
I think it's a great question. I think it's going to be a combination. You know, the federal government led the world on connectivity with the internet, with ARPANET back in the 60s. I think NSTIC, the NSTIC program, and what they're doing with the concept of bootstrapping the federated identity system here is a bellwether for the rest of the world, and it's something that we need for scale. But I think the banks are going to lead from a cybersecurity perspective as well. They're looking at, taking consumer security, bringing security and identity assurance to consumers in a way that consumers can easily use it without it inconveniencing their daily lives. So they're looking to do more. They're looking to stay secure, but they're looking to provision those services in a way that's very user friendly. In the government, we don't always do that. We tend to look at it and kind of lock things down sometimes and bring out dedicated hardware tokens and things like that. Whereas the banks are now looking at a much broader, looking at a platform that enables interaction with their customers in a way that's both secure but friendly towards the environment they're working in. So you'll see a combination of government bootstrapping the federated side, and then the point technologies and companies like Apple, Samsung will follow, Google, they'll all follow in terms of what Apple's lead here. And what you'll see banks doing is they're deploying it right now are platforms that enable them to embrace pervasive user technology choices. And that's really what we're about, and I think where the world is going. So
D-A-O-N, daon.com. Jim, I got to ask you a question. I was driving home Route 28 last night, and the big building that had the sign on it, A-K-A-M-I, Acme, and I remember them helping dynamically assign storage for websites that got a lot of information hits. Do you work with them, or where's this fit in the future in Daon, the federal government?
We do partner with Akamai, and they're a leader. If you think about the internet and what gets processed through the internet, they are a leader there. And we're working with them on some cloud solutions that involve secure identities. So I think when you look at Daon, frankly, we complement everybody. We have a long history of identity management and biometrics, where the industry's going. So we have a lot of strategic partners. And as you know, Connor talked about the banks. There's certainly, you know, when you think about a banking economy that moves $13 trillion a day, much of it now being moved through mobile devices, that's got to be something where we have more secure authentication. And Akamai is a great company. They're all over the federal government, but all over all of the systems that are out there. So they are one of our strategic partners.
Connor, just a real quick question at the end here about the Apple product. So the fingerprint information is encrypted on the phone, not the server. Is that good or bad?
If they do it right, it's good to have it. It has to be encrypted wherever you store. You got to encrypt it. You got to protect it. What they're doing is the new A7 chip. They're encrypting it on the chip. The consequence of it though is it's not portable. And so I can't, you know, sit in front of my. Our vision is that you can do that, but you can also, for example, I have a smart TV. I can sit in front of my smart TV and authenticate myself to a service in the cloud. So the Apple model, the initial model at least, does not export the biometric off the device. That's a choice they've made, I think, to test the waters and look at consumer use cases and consumer comfort levels around this. Ultimately, you can see it being in the cloud because you want to be able to migrate across devices and across a heterogeneous ecosystem of devices. I mean, as you were asking me in the quiz earlier, I mean, we have a ton of tablets, a ton of laptops, all different, smartphones in my house, all different technologies. I want to be able to pick up any one of them and have them recognize me, right, and then provide service to me on that device. I'm just renting the real estate of the screen and keyboard. And the Apple phone isn't there yet, but it's certainly a great step forward. And I think there's a lot more to come in this space. And I think it's going to come really quickly. I think by, you know, this time next year, there'll be a fundamental change in how we authenticate online.
Tell you what, I'd love to have you guys come back maybe next year, 6 or 8. It's changing so quickly. It's like I leave the studio, come back in the next 2 days. It's everything's changed and all kinds of new problems, situations. Syria, new Apple phone. I'm sure there'll be new Apple hardware next year and all kinds of changes with identity and verification in the federal government. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Jim Williams, Senior Vice President for Global Business Development at Dayon, and his colleague, Connor White, President X Products at Dayon. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.